I guess I came away from the ride going, we went through this amazing change journey that worked. There must be stuff that's useful to other people. I think there are lots of lessons from sport that are really useful for us in our everyday life, whether it be in a corporate environment or not. I think there's some stuff that's just really useful. But the first proper international regatta I won was 15 weeks before the Olympics, and that was 9 years into my time in the rowing team.
Wow.
I think a high performance environment is where you have the vast majority of the team pushing themselves and each other to be as good as they can be, where there's kind of high support and high challenge. So, I mean, when I set this business up 12 years ago with Tom, I guess we didn't use the word beautiful business, but I think that's exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted to do stuff that was really meaningful and made a difference with clients. And we wanted people to really want to be part of. And I guess that's what a beautiful business means to me.
Hello, and welcome to the Beautiful Business Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Gorpik, and today we're fortunate to be joined by Ben Hunt-Davis, MBE, Olympic rowing gold medalist and now leadership coach and author of the renowned book, Will It Make the Boat Go Faster?
Welcome to the Beautiful Business Podcast from The Wow Company. If you're growing a UK business with a team of 8 to 80 people, you're in the right place. Every fortnight, we share honest conversations with brilliant business minds, exploring the realities of leadership, the challenges that come with growth, and the practical ideas that make a real difference. From purpose to profit, people to process, this is your space for fresh thinking and down-to-earth inspiration.
Ben, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Paul. Thanks very much for inviting me to be part of your podcast. It's great to be with you this morning.
First question we ask all of our guests, Ben, is tell us something we couldn't find out about you on the internet.
The thing I'd love to do better is carpentry. I've been to carpentry lessons kind of a couple of years ago, and I keep playing around with stuff, and I'm just not nearly as good as I want to be. So that's something that I'm trying, and I'd love to be better at.
And is that a practice thing, or, you know, there's the 10,000 hours myth that, like, if you spend 10,000, but I'm sure that I've spent 10,000 hours doing things and I just don't have the talent for it. So is it that you've not had the time, or you don't have the talent?
So I think that there's an accuracy thing. So I think with more practice, I would learn how to get more accurate, and so therefore I could improve. But, you know, there's probably a basic talent thing that I'm just missing anyway.
Well, maybe one day, instead of just making a boat go faster, you could actually make the boat. Ben, tell us a bit about your story. You're obviously, have you come from winning Olympic gold, or even before winning Olympic gold, to now having written this extremely popular book and helping so many businesses in the way that you did?
Chunk of time, the first 7 years I was in the rowing team, I was particularly unsuccessful. We then went through a 2-year change, I'm sure we'll talk about more, where we changed a lot of stuff and enabled us to be successful. And I guess I came away from the rowing going, we went through this amazing change journey that worked. There must be stuff that's useful to other people. I didn't know about the corporate environment I did, but there was some sort of business training stuff. So I started looking into that post-rowing, got a job with a training company where actually one of the people who joined the same week as me was called Harriet Beveridge. We worked together for a number of years. I left that business after a while. She left a few years later. And I called her at some point and said, you've left this particular business. Do you want to write a book with me? We wrote the book. And so, it's just, you know, through your book and through the business I now run, of the same name as a book. I think there are lots of lessons from sport that are really useful for us in our everyday life, whether it be in a corporate environment or not. I think there's some stuff that's just really useful. And so it's been a journey to work out which bits from sport do translate well into business and the kind of, you know, our normal worlds, and which bits don't. It's taken a bit of time to figure all that out. But I think we got some pretty good ingredients here.
Yeah, so going back to the rowing, was there a turning point? When you look back, was there a turning point? Was there a catalyst for that change from sort of, like, I think the way you said, kind of like average performing to high performing?
We competed the World Championships in August in Cologne, Germany in 1998, and we came seventh. So in rowing, you have six boats in a final. If you don't make the final, a racer from in the B final, and we won that, which is Noel's idea of fun. And we went out for a very, very drunken night to drown our sorrows and came back going, things have to change. Things have to be different. And to be fair to our crew coach, the year before, he'd be that kind of running up to those championships, he'd been trying to get us to change, but it'd been a classic example where he'd been trying, but we just kind of weren't that interested. I mean, we could just keep doing the same thing and, you know, we're sure things would be different. And so he'd been trying to get us to change. Got us, and him telling the story differently and articulating a kind of different path better was a critical turning point. And we came back from those championships. We had a number of conversations over a number of weeks and came up with a different plan, basically.
Presumably part of that you're alluding to is some like quite tough conversations, quite brutal conversations.
I think it's very easy to think that in sport, the goals are really clear and easy and everybody wants to win. So therefore that makes it easy, but that's not the case. I mean, in the Premier League, the teams at the bottom generally are trying to win. They're trying not to get relegated. The teams in the middle generally want to stay safe in the middle. And then you've got teams at the top who are trying to win. So not everybody, and some people just want to play more minutes. Some people just want to be part of the set club. So even in sport, where it's obvious, it's not that obvious. People have very different goals. And for us, the start point was agreeing what we actually wanted to achieve. And some people whose goal had been to be an Olympian, which is a perfectly fair goal, that's not the goal I had. And it meant we approached the guy who just wanted to be an Olympian and me wanted to do better than that. We approached everything differently because we were trying to do different things. So the start point was going, actually, what is the one thing that actually we really, really want to achieve? And we had some pretty difficult conversations around that. So the start point was, what's the goal? What's the environment we need, the culture, the environment we need so that we can actually achieve this? Because we're going to have to do so many things differently. We knew that when we got down to the training center every day, we'd have to have difficult conversations, we'd have to make difficult decisions, and we would have to do difficult things. So we needed a culture and environment where that was okay, where we could do that and come up with the right answers so that we could make the boat go faster.
So at which point did this concept of will it make the boat go faster come in?
We'd made the decision we were going to move training center. We set up a place in Hammersmith, not far from where I am now. The idea was to have a culture, a learning culture, a culture where we could learn, we could change, where we could make mistakes, where we could, you know, do things differently, where we could give each other feedback, where we could be more open, where we could be more challenging. And that was kind of all the stuff we needed to do. And I can't remember how many months into this, one of the guys who was late most of the time, one morning he turned up late and somebody went, you're just not making the boat go faster. And that was kind of the question and stuck.
What was your expectation going into Sydney? Were you favourites at that point? Or did you have an expectation of medalling? Or what was your expectation going into the games?
We had very high expectations. And our competitors knew we were really fast. So we started this change at the beginning of the 99 season. Through 99, we actually came second in every race we did, which included the World Championships. We got a silver medal at the end of that season, at the World Championships. In the 2000 season, we came second in the first kind of big regatta, and then we won the next two. So we went into the Olympics having won the two previous regattas. So all of our competitors knew we were pretty quick. We knew we were pretty quick. What was kind of really interesting was most Brits didn't think we were that good because they knew what we were like. They knew that physically we weren't that good. They knew that we'd lost everything for years and years and years. You know, people knew I was a serial loser, and that's just the way they thought. I mean, you know, and it's not meant to be kind of, you know, judgmental or whatever, but that's just the way it was.
Yeah.
You know, for the first proper international regatta I won was 15 weeks before the Olympics, and that was 9 years into my time in the rowing team. You know, so people knew I wasn't that good. And so our opposition, who didn't know me so well, all the other guys in the boat, saw us getting faster and faster and faster and just went, they're fast. And I had a conversation with one of the other guys in the team a few years afterwards, and he went, hey, you guys were just so lucky.
And I'm, you know, yeah. I kind of, what do you mean by that? And he went, oh, you know, the, you know, you just kind of hadn't really, you know, you weren't that good. And I went, okay, so the silver medal at the World Championships, what about that? And he went, I was lucky. And can I say why? And then I went, what about that, regatta in Vienna we won? And he went, yeah, that was lucky. And I went, what about the next regatta we won? He went, yeah, that was lucky. And he goes, how much luck does it take before you start going, maybe they're just quite fast?
Okay, and then your, this philosophy, will it make the boat go faster? That covers everything from where you train to how far you bend your knees when you're doing squats or whatever exercise in the gym. Does that then, when you're sat on the start line of the final in Sydney, does that give you something in your head that you know that you've done everything you possibly could?
So what we did is we spent a certain amount of time looking back and going, and look at the changes that we've made. Look at how far we've come. We've been able to do this and this and this and this. So presumably this next problem, we've solved the last 15 problems. Presumably, I don't know how we'll do this yet, but let's have the confidence that we can do this thing because of all the other things we've done so far. So sitting on the start line, we had confidence born out of knowing the progress we'd made, knowing the changes we'd made. So there's that. And then there's another bit about if you're sitting on the start line going, oh my God, it's the Olympic Games. This is, you know, the last 10 years of my life are going to be measured in the next 5.5 minutes. I mean, that makes life quite hard. So the other thing that's going through your head is just going, it's just right. Tony, right. All I've got to do is I've got to just, you know, push my legs in a certain way. I've got to move my shoulders and my arms in a certain way. I've got to move my back in a certain way. I've got to move my hands in a certain way. I've done it before. That's all I got to do. And all I need to focus on is the first three strokes. I just need to do, you know, if I get the first stroke right and move on to the second stroke right, that'll really set me up to get to finish the second stroke right and get me onto the third stroke. And then when I'm doing that, I'll then work out how to do the fourth, fifth, and sixth strokes. Because if I'm getting that detail right, everything else will just take care of itself. So that's all I've got to do. So yeah, while there's loads of other stuff you might try to get into your head, you're just going three strokes. That's all I can do, three strokes. We've done it so many times. That's all this is about.
So you've got the thing of trusting the process, but at the same time, you know that you've got millions of people watching on TV.
Yeah, it's following the process. And if you let millions of people watching you, this is the most important thing in 10 years of my life, get into your head too much, it makes it really hard to perform. So just getting into the process of just going in a bit, focusing on the small details. And if you're focusing on one thing, it makes it hard to focus on other things. So rather than trying to block stuff out, you're just going, my focus should be on this thing. And if it's on this, then I can't.
There's no space for anything else. Yeah.
But the main, for me, the kind of biggest moment was standing on the medal podium. They'd given out the bronze medalists, silver medalists, and then they go, and then I was kind of waiting for the moment going, and the Olympic champions are Great Britain. And that was, for me, that was the moment. That was the moment. That was amazing.
That you realized that it's all real. It's happened. You've done it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So was then Sydney your last Olympics? Did you go to 2004?
It was my last Olympics competing. So I competed in Barcelona, Atlanta, Sydney. That was enough. I got married 3 weeks later. And I think, you know, I'd been incredibly selfish while I was on the rowing team because everything was about making the boat go faster. Not necessarily making my fiance happier. So if I wanted her to hang around, then I had to change. So I finished competing at the Sydney Games. And then I actually went to another three Olympics as part of the support team, a leadership team. So I went to Beijing, London, and Rio as part of the kind of Team GB support team, which was really interesting working with 20 or so different sports. But for me, you know, competing, that was done. Sydney was it.
But at what point did you realize that you might have something that was transferable between sport and business?
It took me a few months to get a proper job. Well, I don't know if it's a proper job, a job with a training company where we kind of ran mindset, behavior change training courses. Very often after a big IT implementation or something, and everyone would, you know, they had the new system, but they were kind of pissed off and didn't want to use it. We kind of did the mindset stuff. to start with, I didn't want to talk about the Olympics. I was going, that's in the past. I want to learn new stuff. I want to do different stuff. I'm working with all these other people who have got kind of business backgrounds. I want to be able to do what they do. They're really, really good. So I guess having been through this change and thinking it's useful, I then learned all the theory about why it had been useful in the new job. And to start with, as I said, I didn't want to talk about the Olympics. I wanted to be kind of just doing different stuff. And then I've realized that actually being able to wrap things up differently, this, you know, the behavior change and mindset stuff, the principles, being able to wrap it up in a way that really resonated with people, that's what I could do differently to a lot of other people. It was over a period of years ago, actually the rowing is still useful to help me do this kind of next thing that I want to be able to do to help people to kind of change into balance. And it took a bit of time to work out which bits of it were really important. I mean, you know, working until you pass out is probably not the thing that's most useful.
Yeah.
And then one more. And then one more. You know, in a kind of work environment where all is black, one more. That's not really the thing. So that, you know, and there are all sorts of bits that are incredibly useful, and some bits that are just kind of not so relevant. And it just, yeah, it just took a bit of time to figure it out.
So let's get into the will it make the boat go faster philosophy in a bit more detail. When you take this into different organizations, specifically businesses, what are the core principles that you're looking at under your framework?
So the will it make the boat go faster question has really got two parts to it. The first part is about clarity of direction. Now, I spent the last quite a few years going into different organizations, working with different leadership teams. If you ask a leadership team to write down what the goal is, you will get quite a few different answers. If you go into a business and the first 10 people you bump into, you say, what's the goal? What are you really trying to achieve? You'll get lots of different answers. Quite often, leaders can go, but I've thought about this really carefully and, you know, I know the goal. And I've spent weeks thinking about it, but I've told people once or five times, it doesn't mean they've got it. So the first bit has got to be about how you actually help. Because if you're just saying the goal is 50 million quid profit, you know, and if I'm employee 100, really, who cares? So we help organizations come up with crazy goals, whatever you want to call the goal, but where people are actually, where it's a compelling. It's compelling. People got a chance of buying into it.
So I completely get your example of what isn't compelling, but how do you uncover something that is compelling?
Firstly, there are a number of different types of goals. So you can have the competitive goal about being, we want to be number one. There are those kind of goals. There are the burning platform type goals. And over COVID, quite a lot of us came up with kind of burning platform goals, going, my God, if we don't solve this, we're out of business.
Yeah.
There are the adversarial goals. Airbus, quite famously, a number of years ago, had, you know, their big goal was beat Boeing. And if you went into the place in Filton, Birmingham, in Bristol, there was a massive, massive banner in the main factory, just with those two words:
beat Boeing.
Everybody knew the idea was to beat Boeing.
Yeah.
There are a number of different types of goal, and different things are appropriate for different times, for different organizations. I think the thing that makes a goal relevant for a business, it's got to be to do with a business, and there's got to be a really good story behind it. So a number of years ago, we worked with a champagne house in the UK, and it was a general, and they had kind of about 40 people marketing and selling champagne in the UK. Clearly, all the production was done in France. And the business strategy came from France and all the rest of it. And the Brits were kind of frustrated that they thought they could do some stuff better than the French. And in quite a few places, they were doing stuff better than the French. And they said that the goal for them was to, that they, hopefully I get this word for word right, to set the standards to which others aspire. And so basically what that was code for was going, we want to be so good. The French are going, wow, you know, we need to copy the Brits here. We need to copy the Brits there. And it's something that everybody in the business, you know, they had felt the frustration again. We're doing this so well. Why can't we, you know, and it didn't mention their brand in it. It didn't mention,
you know, champagne in it, but it was something that was really relevant for all of them. And it worked really well at galvanizing everyone behind it, going, we've just got to be so good at what we do. So I think it's the relevance is really important. And I think with all these statements, you can add the relevance and the story behind it.
So you need the top bit that's really clear and memorable. Having something that's three sentences long isn't memorable.
I also think there's some organizations, they want a vision, a mission, and a purpose. And I think that's slightly problematic because most people can't tell you the difference between the three things.
Yeah.
And the chance of them remembering all three is pretty limited.
Yeah.
People have got other stuff in their mind. So having this one overarching sentence, this one thing, makes life much easier. And then you have really clear metrics, measurable things that sit underneath it that, you know, people can go, well, you know, how will we know when we've beaten Boeing? It's because we, you know, these are the numbers, or set the standards to which others aspire. They had some clear business metrics around how they would be able to measure themselves. When people are going, we want to be the number one, they go, you know, that can be measured in a number of different ways, but the way we're measuring it is across these different things. And so that's kind of the first part. And then the second part around, and so that's the question, will it make the boat go faster? Well, I now know what my boat is and what direction we're going in. And then there's actually alignment behind it. I think we all know that it's really easy to do the stuff that's in front of us, to do the stuff that we've done before, to do, you know, turn up to a meeting because we've been invited and we sit there, Gary, what am I doing here? This isn't actually making my boat go faster, but I'm too polite to say, this isn't the best use of my time. I'll do this report because it's what I've always done, or because you asked me, whereas like I know it's a total waste of time. So once you know the direction, there's then something about being able to challenge and question and push so that you can spend your time doing the stuff that'll actually really take you where you want to go.
Yeah. So I suppose that's where your question comes in. Will it make the boat go faster? Will this help us beat Boeing? So I suppose the thing that was the bit that was interesting to me, and obviously like my things like beautiful business, and like part of that is enjoying the beauty of life and experiences around you. So you're focused on, you work at Airbus, you're focused on beating Boeing. Does everything else, is there a risk then that everything else goes out the window? Some of the more soulful parts. But is there a risk that with that myopic focus that somehow you lose some of the, like the joyfulness, some of the beauty of life?
You know, we all know that within business, there's got to be something about customers. There's something about finances, and there should be probably something about people. And, you know, even whether your goal is, you know, myopic, like beat Boeing, if people are having a horrible time and you've got really high staff turnover, then it's going to be really hard to beat Boeing. You probably need a workforce who are really engaged, who are really committed, who have got balance, whatever that looks like for them, so that they can turn up with as much of themselves as possible. In order to be a successful business, you need people who have got some sort of balance. So you can either go, well, you know, in order to, and I don't know what the Boeing measures are, so I'm just going to make the hub, but you know, in order to be Boeing, you know, we need to be, you know, our pricing needs to be right as to kind of how we buy stuff. Our skills and development stuff needs to be right. There'll be loads of different things. Or you put it in at the top. So our crazy goal to my business is, so we talk about, we want to be world-class at helping our clients and each other achieve their gold medals. So, and then below that, in the kind of conquering measures, we've got three different areas of measure. The first one is we talk about making a difference, which is, are we actually world-class at what we do? Do we actually really make a difference, or just take people's money? The second measure is about the smashing our targets, money, you know, the kind of profit revenue stuff. And then the third measure is about, we talk about enjoying our lives. And we've got two metrics around, are the team happy and engaged? And I'm always really clear with people, if we are achieving two of the three, then we're failing. We've got to achieve all three areas in order to be successful. And if we are
doing an amazing job with our clients, we're making lots of money, and people aren't happy, then we have failed.
And also, it's probably not sustainable either, is it?
No, it's not. Yeah, everybody has a choice where they work. And if they're not happy, at some point, they will leave. And then you've just got, it's really time-consuming and difficult and expensive to recruit people. Why would you want to have a business where you don't treat people well, so you've got a really high turnover?
So I think the bigger risk is actually that they're really unhappy and they don't leave.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I'm sure we've both seen both of that. In terms of like having that impact with your clients, how do you measure that bit?
So we measure that in, we've got three key measures at the moment. One is, so at the end of a day's program, we'll ask people to fill in a feedback score. Yeah, kind of scores out of 10. And we've got a target on that. We want to be getting, on average, 8.75 out of 10. For the end of day feedback we receive, we've got a target on the net promoter score. So after each engagement, we ask the client, the buyer, or some different people, depending on the situation, for a net promoter score. And our target is plus 85, and which we think is pretty high. If we can do that, we think that's pretty good. And then the third one is when we're running programs, we do some diagnostic stuff beforehand, where we ask people to score various different things, and we do it again afterwards. And we are, this year, our target was a 20% uplift in those scores. So those are our three measures on how we make a difference. And then there are some other things that we do about testimonial stuff, but that they aren't in the top three measures. So there are other measures below that, but those are the top three for that.
Great. So you've got your clear goal, with, remind me, helping your clients achieve their gold medals.
We want to be world-class at helping our clients and each other achieve our gold medals.
Yeah.
So we want, if we're working with you, we want to be world-class at helping you achieve your crazy goal.
Yeah.
And also, I want my team, I want, you know, as individuals in my in our team, we've all got our own goals. And rather than just helping our clients achieve our goals, I want to help my people achieve their goals too.
You talked about identifying the goal, and then the second piece was the environment.
So you then need an environment where basically you make it easy, as easy as possible for people to align to the goal. And I think there are kind of a couple of key bits. One is about having a performance mindset, or you can call it a growth mindset if you want, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Where people are actually willing and able to learn and change and develop and try things out. And there's a desire to be better this week than we were last week. If this week I do stuff in exactly the same way as I did this time last year, that's just not going to be good enough. Stuff is, in the last year, things have changed. You know, technology has changed. People's expectations have changed. And if I'm no better than I was this time last year or this time last month, then I'd kind of stuffed. And so I think having a performance mindset where we were able to look at what we do and really challenge ourselves to be as good as we can. I think it's quite easy to go, oh, well, I got a result. You know, the numbers are good, the results are good, therefore I'm good enough. But I don't think that's true. We should be looking at the number and going, you know, did we get the result? Great. But really, how good was I? Because we've all had situations where we got a good result and we come away going, God, I was pretty lucky there. The market was on my side. You know, something happened. You know, something happened and I just kind of got the result. The person was desperate and they were willing to buy anything. And we also have situations where we think we've done a fantastic job and we still haven't got the result. Results and performance are they're linked, but they are separate. And having a mindset where we're constantly going, how good was I? Not how good was, you know, we need to measure the result and that's kind of interesting, but really, how good was I and how do I make sure that I am better tomorrow, next week, next month, next year.
Yeah. And I guess that's why the question is, tell me if I got this wrong, but will it make the boat go faster? Not, will it help us win gold? Because from what I've understood, will it make the boat go faster is things that are within your control, within one's control. The performance bit is within my control. The result is less so within my control.
Yeah, the result, we can't control the results. We can influence them, but there are so many external factors going on. We've got to go, what are the things that I can control? And also, you don't necessarily know exactly how good you need to be to get the result. Whereas if we're just going, can I be better? Can I, yes, and make the boat go faster? What will make the boat go faster? Rather, you're just on a continuous journey of kind of improvement and change. I think a high performance environment is where you have the vast majority of the team pushing themselves and each other to be as good as they can be, where there's kind of high support and high challenge.
High support and high challenge.
And, you know, just challenging and going, you know, that wasn't good enough, do better, do better, do better, isn't necessarily that good or helpful. You know, you need the high support bit of going, yeah, try this out. If it doesn't work, we'll just figure out, you know, what you can learn from this and do better. When, you know, where people feel supported, people feel as though they can try different things, people feel as though they can make different decisions, people feel as though that if they, you know, make the wrong decision and things don't work out, it'll be okay because they'll just learn and be better tomorrow. Whereas if it's just high challenge, if people aren't supported properly, then you're not going to take many risks. So I think the high challenge and high support have got to go hand in hand. You know, that's got to be part of the cultural bit. Another part of the culture bit, as far as I'm concerned, is actually, you know, having an environment you want to be part of. You know, for me, I think being kind is important. You actually be like,
so getting the balance between where you care about people, you're thoughtful, and you're striving to be as good as you possibly can be.
That's, I think those are kind of pretty important ingredients of a high performance culture.
And then, like, my observation is that you end up attracting sort of like-minded people, and maybe, dare I say, even sort of like repelling those that don't, because it's just not a fun place to work. Whereas people that do want that high challenge, high support, I love what you said about having just that kind environment where you genuinely care, but you feel like you can thrive within that environment because you do have the support, you're working with kind people, but fundamentally you look around the room and everyone else there is also trying to be the best they can be.
And so if you saw something that I was and I wasn't doing it as well as you thought I could, and you chose not to help me be better, I mean, is that really kind? You know that I desperately want to win. How can it possibly be kind for you to choose not to help me? That's not kind. It seems as though if people are kind of bought in, the kind thing is to go, you know, Paul, I've noticed this. Do you mind if we have a conversation about it? I think, you know, this bit you're doing so, so well. But this bit, you know, maybe we can find a way of, you know, helping you be, I mean, is that all kind? Rather than just going, everyone going, he's rubbish at that. Just let's not tell him.
So, in my business, we talk about kind versus nice.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And actually, Sometimes the kind thing to do is the difficult conversation or the awkward conversation. But fundamentally, it's the, like you say, it's the kind thing to do. In a business environment, A, it's harder to get the instantaneous feedback, quite the immediate feedback. But also, there's just not a culture of the, like a norm, I dare say, of giving that feedback.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. And, you know, the classic thing is going, Paul, I'm, you know, thanks for turning up for your 6 month appraisal. I want to give you some feedback of stuff you did in June.
Really good.
What, how does that help me? I mean, if somebody, while I was rowing, if somebody said, oh, you know, Ben, last week I saw you do something. Hey, thanks. So you've let me continue training for a week without telling me that. So you've stopped me getting better over the last week. Thanks. Really, thanks. Please. You know, if you see me do something, tell me so I've got a chance of changing.
Doing something about it, yeah.
Why would you not talk to me? So in my business, what we try to do, and we haven't got it perfect because it's impossible. Yeah, what we try to do is as soon as we see or hear something, we go, Chris, can I just, you know, I just noticed this, can I share some thoughts? Or and sometimes, you know, the timing's not right. Sometimes, you know, we're both running off in different directions but having an intent to go, I saw this, I heard this, can we talk about it? And the more often you do it, the smaller the conversation it becomes. Whereas if you're saving it to 6 months, suddenly that thing you did 5 months ago, it's really important.
But also, if you leave it 6 months, it makes it sound more like a grudge than I just noticed it. And I think the language is important as well, but also the habit of it just happening and everyone in the organization doing it. What other differences have you noticed between sport and business performance environments?
Whether you're a athlete in a team or in a squad, or you're the physio, or you're the, you know, groundsman or whatever, you have chosen specifically to work there. I think in businesses, I mean, kind of half the team in my business, their first or second job out of university, and they're working for some weird random consulting business doing, you know, it's not their childhood ambition. They didn't dream of doing this, and they've ended up in this, you know, small little quirky company. So, you know, that makes things different. So the intensity is different, but I still think the same principles apply.
How do you bring some of that intensity, like without the toxic side of that intensity?
Having clarity of direction, going, this is what we're here to do, and this is why it's important, and this is a difference we can make to these people. This is what it'll mean to, you know, us as a team. This is what it'll mean to me. And it's nice to be somewhere where I'm really encouraged, and, you know, maybe sometimes I'm, you know, can't really be off, but actually to be encouraged, to be pushed, you know, maybe that's actually quite a nice thing to be, you know, where someone's actually got high expectations of me rather than just, so trying to foster an environment where people think all of that stuff is kind of good and nice. I think then enables you to kind of up the intensity at times.
And if you've got a culture where people
want to care, where people are happy to kind of go harder, people are happy. I think that in sport, you can kind of expect it because everybody has really chosen to be there doing that thing. I didn't have a choice between being a gymnast or a rower or anything else in rowing. It's the only thing that I could do. It's the only place I could do it. I couldn't just go to Belgium and go, oh, I fancy rowing. Yeah. There was only one place where I could be, and I wanted to be there. Whereas, you know, most of us can choose to work in lots and lots of different places. So having an environment where people want to be, where people are happy to be pushed. So the culture is just so, so important.
But before, you said something about this thing of like walking into an organization, if you ask the leadership team what their goal is, you get four different answers. And you said that sometimes the leaders think that they, because they've talked about the goal three or four times, that everyone knows. Like I see that absolutely, like all the time, like really great intentions, good work at the start, and then it kind of peters out. Not bad intention, but people just get busy, things happen, fall into like routines. Like what when you do your work or consulting, what do you advise, or what kind of structures do you put in place, or behaviors do you try and encourage so that it endures beyond that initial phase?
So can I ask you, Paul, so how many people in your leadership team? You've got a sizable business. How many people in your leadership
team? So there's five people in our leadership team.
Five. If I were to ask them all to write down what the goals are, would you expect 100%, you know, everyone would be kind of write down exactly the same thing, or would there be a bit of variation?
So I'm going to do this exercise to validate the answer I'm going to give you. I think they would all give me the same example, that our goal is to be a high performing team.
And if you were to ask the next level down,
honestly, no. But partly because there's been a new piece of work we've been doing. Our thing's always to be the most loved advisors to beautiful businesses. But what we realized doing some work, we started this year, we put in a structure of team leaders across it. Just as we'd grown, we didn't really have the structure to work with it. So we put in this like light touch structure of team leaders. And at that point, our previous goal had always been to be the most loved advisors to people building beautiful businesses. And actually, there's even listening to what you said today, there's a lot of goodness there, but actually it just wasn't clear enough. And actually the thing that underpins everything in our organization is high performance and being a high performing team.
And so what will you do to make sure that actually kind of filters down through the organization? So every one of the 100 employees could, if you said, you know, write down the goal and write down the measures, how will you What will you do to make sure it's clear?
Yeah, so two things we're working on is, one is with these team leaders to get them really clear so that they're our advocates. And then our big set piece events, we do work, we're fully, since COVID, we've been fully remote. We had three offices before COVID, since then been fully remote. And we have quarterly in-person, what we call play days, where we get everyone together. So those are our big set piece things. And then beyond that, each week, Monday morning at 11 o'clock, we have a team call where everyone joins. So a combination of those things. And I think to be part of the, when I asked you the question about how do you ensure it lasts, is I think sometimes we're guilty of, we talk about it a few times, and then the next time it's, well, what deadlines have we got, or what targets have we got, or what's this thing or what's that thing? And actually we haven't been good enough at repeating that and reinforcing that over time.
And I mean, I think that's the answer. I think, you know, so when it's the call about, you know, the deadlines or the this or that, it should always be the deadlines so that we can. And I think also, there's just something about continuity for leadership teams just to continue to, you know, talk about the big picture. So when we've worked with a leadership team to go, right, what is your crazy goal or North Star or whatever you want to call it? And when they do an event to kind of start to talk about it, we think getting the leadership team to talk about it in a compelling way is really important. And then getting people in groups to discuss it, to debate it, to discuss it, so that they'd got a chance, because you can just sit back and passively listen. But if you then actually have to discuss it and, you know, with your peers about what this thing is, why it is, you just got to think about it differently. So giving people a chance to talk about it, I think, is really important.
That sounds really, really good advice for anyone. I think you wrote the book in 2011. It's now 25 years since Sydney. You've obviously helped a load of people, made a massive impact in that time, but you must have also seen a load of people get it wrong. I'm really curious, what are the pitfalls when people go about implementing the, like, will it make the boat go faster philosophy?
So I think there are a few things. So firstly, the question, will it make the boat go faster? Sometimes people just pick up on faster and go, so are you doing everything faster? You're doing, you know, you can do more faster, 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 faster. Whereas for us, you know, will it make the boat go faster was actually what we wanted to do. You know, for other organizations, it might be, you know, to be world-class at doing this or to be, and that doesn't necessarily mean faster. You know, the faster for us literally meant that. So giving people a chance to actually understand what that word means for them, you know, better, more effectively, more, you know, whatever it is. So there's something about helping people understand what their question is. I love it when people use my question. It's great. But actually, people got to know what their question is. And I think sometimes it can get kind of weaponized a bit so that you can kind of beat people over the head if they're not doing things faster or, you know, better or whatever it is. You got to bring people along. You got to have the culture so people can ask and answer the question properly so that people can, you know, do things differently. So people can have a performance mindset.
Yeah. And are there any behaviors that you see consistently that, I suppose, to use the boat analogy, actually slow the boat down rather than make the boat go faster?
So one of the things we used to talk about with feedback was kind of tell it as you see it, which was really about, I guess it's a shortcut for really tell it how you see it and make sure it lands the way that it's useful. You know, mistakes people make are going, and if they're going to say something, go, well, I told you, it's your problem. It's your, you know, you want me to give you feedback, bang, I've given you feedback, rather than going, I've noticed this thing, how do I make it work for you, making me feel better because I've got something off my chest. Yeah, a whole lot of subtlety that goes with it to be able to do it well. And, you know, it's just when people boil it down to the headlines, they're going, I've got to be able to give feedback. It doesn't matter how badly I do it, I've got to give feedback. You know, there are all sorts of pitfalls around that. Having the right degree of comfort where people are happy with the way they're being pushed to be as good as they can be. It's, you know, there's so much balance and nuance in there. You know, we looked really carefully at the culture that we needed so that we could be really fast. And if people really weren't able to adapt and change, didn't want to be in it, then they shouldn't be in it.
And the kind of bit about kind of personal accountability, I found really hard.
You know, there were some things I really wanted to change, but frankly, it was a coach's job to make me win.
Right.
You know, that's what they get. They sometimes got paid, sometimes not. This last guy did get paid. It was his job to make me win. You know, tell me what to do and I'll do it. I found it, at his view, he was going, no, I can, I'm here to support you. I'm here to help you, but you got to, you know, you got to figure this stuff out. You've got to make the changes. You've got to, it's on you. I'll help you however I can, but it's on you. And that's a change that I found. I mean, it's a pretty fundamental change.
It's huge.
And I found it quite hard. But people were kind of willing to, you know, give me enough space, give me enough time to help me actually figure that one out. And I remember having a conversation with Martin, our crew coach. One day, kind of over second breakfast, he was going, right, Ben, I want you to, tomorrow I want to talk about, you know, the reasons why you've lost. You know, you've kind of the oldest in the crew, you've lost more than other people, and I haven't coached you all the time, so I'd just love to understand more about this. So tomorrow morning, maybe we can talk about it. And I came back with a list of all the reasons, okay? Lack of funding, poor equipment, you know, it takes ages to go and see a physio. And he went, yeah, good point, good point, yeah. good point. And he would go, what else? I went, the weather. And he went, yeah, definitely, you know. And you go, what else? I go, the Germans, if the Germans weren't so good. And, you know, there was clearly one thing he was after. He was going, there's only one thing in common with every defeat so far. You know, what do you think that is?
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, it was a pretty difficult conversation.
Wow,
that is. I think I finally got that.
So I suppose, like, the reason for me digging into that was thinking from a business point of view. What do you, and I suppose there's some key takeaways around giving people feedback, having the conversation, but also giving people space and time and that kind of like kind, caring bit as well, rather than just make it, someone could have very easily made a snap judgment with you and said, look, Ben's lost all these races, he's not up to it, we need to get someone else in.
Yeah, so that's the first thing. Or they could have gone, I spoke to you about taking personal responsibility, you're not taking it, a week's gone past, you're out. Or, and I think kind of managing people in a business is really hard. Again, how much time do I give people to change? You know, I need something to be different. And I think sometimes we can fall into the thing of going, I really want you to change. Maybe I've told you once, but I haven't explained it that well. Maybe I need to give you some more support, rather than I've been thinking this for a long time and I expect you to be a mind reader. And then, you know, in our business, we're a people business. If we can't get people to change, it's really, I kind of find that really upsetting. And over the last 12 years, there are some people we've asked to leave because they haven't, because for whatever reason, whether it be my deficiencies, I hadn't been able to actually get them to change. And there's a time. And how much time you give people is so hard. It's so hard to get it right. That there's never a right answer. So being able to look at ourselves and go, I have tried really hard. I've given them the opportunities. You know, I've tried, you know, not just this one thing 10 times, but I've tried these 10 things.
Yeah, on the balance of kind of probabilities, I've done as much as I can do. And I think that's part of the thing, isn't it? I've given them time and space. I've given as much as I can do. Like maybe it's just not going to work now at this time with these people. Interesting. So Ben, I've absolutely loved talking to you. Tell me a bit what's going on in your world. What have you got looking forward to the next year? What have you got coming up for you, your business?
So I mean, you know, we want to grow, continue to grow. We want to be, so our crazy goal is remaining from this year through to next year. We've had it for the last few years. We want to be world-class, helping our clients and each other achieve their goal mets. I want a business where we're really good at what we do, and it's a business where people really, really want to be.
From listening to previous episodes, you know, we finish all of our episodes with two closing questions. Firstly, what does beautiful business mean to you?
So I mean, when I set this business up 12 years ago with Tom, I guess we didn't use the word beautiful business, but I think that's exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted to do stuff that was really meaningful and made a difference with clients. And we wanted people to really want to be part of the business. So we wanted to have a business we could be proud of. And I guess that's what a beautiful business means to me. And, you know, yes, we're a business and we've got to, you know, have revenue and profit numbers, but those are the two bits that I really care about.
If you had like one final piece of advice to leave people who are out there leading, building beautiful businesses today, what would you leave them with?
What's the big picture goal you want to achieve and how will you get people to really understand it? I think that's got to be the start point. And then the culture and everything else should follow from that. If you know what you're trying to achieve. So I guess for so many businesses that work on a financial year, now is the kind of time to really think what's the big picture and how clear will people be at the beginning of next year on exactly what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it. So I think it is one bit, start at the beginning of going, what's the goal and why?
Beautifully simple. Thank you. So if anyone's listening to this and they'd like to find out more, I really encourage you to read Ben's book. If you've not read the book, get in touch with Ben's organization, get them in to help you figure this stuff out. But finally, Ben, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and share all your insight.
Pleasure. It's been really nice talking. Thanks so much, Paul.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Beautiful Business Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. For more advice and practical tips on what it's really like to build a beautiful business, visit our content hub at wowco.uk/hub or check out the link in the show notes.